The betting had already started before the auction even began. Some wolves wagered she would never be chosen. Others argued someone might take her out of pity. One alpha laughed. If I wanted a Luna without a wolf, I'd marry a statue. The crowd erupted. Lyra lowered her eyes. She had heard worse. Then the Alpha King stood. Silence spread through the arena. No one expected him to participate. No one expected him to stop in front of the one woman nobody wanted. Years later, the same people would tell that story very differently, because they never forgot the day the Alpha King proved she had never belonged to any of them. The morning of the mating auction arrived, with the kind of mountain light that made everything look like a promise. Gold spilled over the peaks of the Northern Territories, pouring down through the valley where the sunlit arena had been decorated with white ribbons and carved stone pillars. Children chased each other through the market stalls below. Elders sat in shaded alcoves with their tea. The day was, by every outward measure, beautiful. Lyra Ashwood sat at the edge of her bed and stared at the white gown laid out before her. It was a simple cut, modest. Her mother had purchased it 3 years ago, back when there was still some hope left in the Ashwood household, and it had been stored in cedar ever since, pulled out and aired every auction season, folded again every auction evening when Lyra came home alone. The fabric had never wrinkled. It had barely ever been worn. She dressed without looking in the mirror. Her younger sister Elise was already at the vanity in the adjacent room, her dark curls pinned into elaborate loops, two admirers' letters tucked beneath her cosmetic jars. Elise was 20, and already had more suitors than their mother could keep track of. She was kind enough not to say much about it, though sometimes Lyra caught the careful way Elise chose her words, that slight hesitation before mentioning a name, a pack, a gathering, as though she were navigating around something fragile. Lyra wasn't fragile. She had simply learned, over 10 years, how to move quietly inside the space her family had carved out around her absence of a wolf. Downstairs, her father Malcolm sat at the breakfast table with his reading glasses on, turning the pages of the Territorial Gazette without really reading it. He looked up when she appeared, and something moved through his face. Not unkindness, exactly, but a tiredness so deep it had become permanent. He nodded. She nodded back. They had run out of reassuring things to say to each other somewhere around year 4. You don't have to go, he said. Tradition requires it. He turned another page. Tradition, he repeated, as though the word tasted like something that had been left out too long. She ate a small breakfast and left before Elise came downstairs. The walk to the arena was not long, but it was long enough. Lyra had amber-gold eyes that people used to comment on when she was a child. Luminous, they'd said, and unusual, like old honey lit from within. That was before the whispers started. Now people noticed her beauty only in the abstract, the way one might notice the craftsmanship of a locked door. She carried herself with the quiet grace of someone who had learned that stillness drew less attention than movement, that attention was frequently unkind. She was 23 years old, and she had never once heard her wolf's voice. Other she-wolves described it as a kind of warmth, a second heartbeat, a presence that arrived somewhere around 13 or 14, sometimes later, like a tide finding its shore. Lyra had waited and waited, and the tide had never come. Healers had examined her. Seers had cast their readings. One moon priest, summoned at great expense when she was 16, had pressed his hands against her temples and gone very still, and then said nothing useful at all, only that her bloodline was complicated. That word had followed her ever since. Complicated. The arena filled quickly. It was a wide open-air amphitheater, its stone tiers filled with nobles and pack representatives, and the auction floor itself was a broad expanse of pale granite in the morning sun. Silk banners in blue and gold snapped above the archways. She-wolves of marriageable age were arranged along the eastern corridor, waiting to be presented before the assembled alphas who came each year to find their Lunas. Lyra took her place at the end of the line. She recognized some of the she-wolves beside her, daughters of minor houses who glanced her way with expressions ranging from pity to poorly concealed contempt. A girl named Sarana, whose father led the Stonemark pack, gave her a look of studied neutrality that was almost worse than outright cruelty. Lyra had grown skilled at reading neutrality. It meant, I see you, and have already dismissed you, and we will not speak of this again. The auction began with the noble daughters presented first, as always. Alphas moved through the corridor with their advisors, making quiet assessments. The more prominent she-wolves commanded clusters of interest immediately, half a dozen alphas hovering, posturing, making formal declarations of intent. There was laughter and negotiation, and once, a brief physical confrontation between two young alphas from rival packs that the officiants quickly quieted. Then the line thinned and thinned. No one stopped before Lyra. Several alphas walked past her without slowing. One glanced at her face, seemed about to pause, and then his advisor leaned close and murmured something that made the alpha move on without another look. She kept her spine straight. She kept her eyes forward. She thought about the mountain light she had walked through that morning, golden and indifferent and completely unconcerned with her. From the spectator tiers, someone called out, "How long before Ashwood's cursed daughter goes home alone again?" Laughter rippled. Another voice, "Save us the suspense and end it early." A third, "If I wanted a Luna without a wolf, I'd marry a statue." That last one got the biggest response. She recognized the voice. Alpha Brennan of the Coldwater Pack, broad-shouldered and accustomed to being admired, enjoying his own joke enormously. The alphas around him laughed. Some of the spectators laughed. Serana pressed her lips together in a thin smile and looked away. Lyra lowered her eyes. She was accustomed to this. She was not unaffected by it, but she was accustomed to it, which was a different thing entirely. Every year she came, and every year the same ritual of public diminishment repeated itself, and every year she walked home in the afternoon light and sat very still for a long time before she was able to speak to anyone. She had learned not to cry where people could see her. She had learned to keep the hurt somewhere small and internal, like a coal that burned without producing flame. She was thinking about the walk home when the arena fell silent. Not the silence of a lull, something different, a collective, instinctive hush that moved through the space like a held breath. Lyra looked up. Alpha King Kaelin Draven had entered the arena. He was taller than she'd imagined. She had seen him only from a great distance at territorial assemblies, never close. Black hair, pale silver-gray eyes, the kind of broad-shouldered frame that absorbed space without crowding it. He wore no decorative regalia, only a dark, high-collared jacket, simple and precise, and his expression was exactly what she'd been told, calm. Not the practiced calm of performance. Something more innate, like a man who had long ago stopped needing the approval of rooms. No one had expected him to attend. The Alpha King did not typically participate in regional auctions. He governed 11 territories from his mountain castle, and it had been assumed, for years, that he had simply chosen to remain unmated, though no one dared ask why. His advisors flanked him, and Counselor Varric, a stout, gray-templed man, whose political instincts were as sharp as his suspicions, leaned close to say something. The king did not respond. His silver-gray eyes moved across the corridor with a quiet steadiness, and the assembled alphas around the floor straightened involuntarily, the way wolves responded to a presence that simply could not be argued with. He walked. He passed the noble daughters with their clusters of admirers without stopping. He passed Serana of Stonemark, who adjusted her posture and smiled. He passed three daughters of senior pack leaders, each of whom had been groomed specifically for a match of this magnitude. He passed all of them with the same calm, unhurried pace, and the silence in the arena stretched longer and longer, and something strange began to build in the air, a collective inability to predict what would happen next. Then he stopped. Before Lyra, she had been looking down. She raised her eyes and found him already watching her, silver-gray against her amber-gold, and the directness of it startled her so completely that she forgot, for a moment, to lower her gaze again. He studied her for a breath, not with assessment, or not only with assessment. There was something quieter in it, something like recognition, though she had no idea what he could possibly be recognizing. She did not smile. She did not adjust her posture. She did not perform the subtle presentation that the other she-wolves had been trained to offer. She was too tired, and too surprised, and beneath both of those things, too certain of the outcome to bother. That was exactly what he saw. Every woman he had passed had wanted something from him. Not cruelly, naturally. The wanting was in the lean of their bodies, the calculation in their smiles, the way each one had adjusted herself slightly in the moment before he reached her. They wanted the crown, the castle, the security, the status, and they were not wrong for wanting it, but the wanting was the loudest thing about each of them. The woman before him was the only one who expected nothing. She stood at the end of the line, in a simple white gown, with her amber eyes slightly wide, and her jaw set in the particular way of someone braced for disappointment, and she had not attempted to present herself to him at all. He extended his hand. The silence in the arena became something else entirely, a collective held breath that didn't know how to release. Lyra stared at his hand. "I would have your name," he said quietly. "Lyra Ashwood," her voice came out steadier than she felt, "though I suspect you already know that." Something crossed his face that might, in another man, have been the beginning of a smile. "I do." "Then you also know I have no wolf." She said it plainly because she had learned that plain honesty was less exhausting than careful omission. "Every alpha here knows it. Your advisors certainly know it." She glanced at Counselor Varric, who was watching with an expression she couldn't fully interpret. "I don't know what you intend, but I won't pretend to be something I'm not." The silence in the arena had by this point become almost physical. Hundreds of wolves watching a woman explain her own disqualification to the Alpha King. "I know precisely what you are," Kaelin said. And then, simply, "Will you choose me?" She looked at him for a long moment. His expression gave her nothing to navigate. No pity, no political calculation she could identify, no performance. Just that same quiet steadiness, extended toward her like an open door. She took his hand. The crowd erupted. The weeks that followed were unlike anything Lyra had experienced, which was not uniformly comforting. The Ashwood household had gone through several stages in rapid succession. Shock, then a chaotic joy from her mother that manifested as sudden intense planning energy, then a more complicated silence from her father, who seemed to be recalibrating something fundamental about his understanding of the world. Elise had appeared in Lyra's doorway the morning after the auction and simply sat beside her on the bed for an hour without saying anything, which was the most honest response of all. The journey to the royal castle in the northern highlands took 3 days, on horseback through sunlit passes, pine forests, and eventually the open highland plateau, where Kaelin's castle sat above a wide valley with a clarity of light that made everything look freshly made. Lyra had not known what to expect of the castle. She had expected grandeur, and there was grandeur, but there was also a spare elegance to it. Bright stone corridors, high windows, gardens terraced down the hillside that someone with genuine feeling had designed. Not a fortress. A home that happened to be large. Kaelin was courteous. Quietly attentive in ways she noticed only gradually. A meal arranged in her preference before she'd given her preference, books that appeared in her rooms on subjects she had mentioned once in passing. He was not a man who spoke much, and she had learned to read silences, and his silences were not hostile. They were something else. Considered. Patient. They spoke each evening, after dinner, in the library that overlooked the valley. He asked about her life, without the performance of condescension, without the slightly too careful tone people used when they were compensating for pity. He listened the way she wished more people listened, fully, without already formulating his response. She told him about the years of waiting, about the healers, about the moon priest who had looked at her and gone still and said nothing useful, about the auction seasons, one after another, the same ritual of diminishment. "Does it still hurt?" he asked. She considered the question, different than it used to. It became familiar before it stopped hurting. "Those aren't the same thing." He nodded. That familiar quiet. Then, people often confuse what they cannot explain with what is not there. She looked at him. "Is that what you think happened to me? I think the absence of an explanation is not the same as a verdict." He turned his wine glass slowly. "I have been looking for the difference between those two things for some time." She didn't press him on what he meant, but she remembered it. The criticism came from outside the castle with the predictability of weather. Council members sent formal correspondence questioning the match's political merits. Pack leaders from the Eastern Territories made pointed inquiries about the succession implications of a Luna who had not awakened. Counselor Varric arrived in person once, under the guise of a routine briefing, and managed within 6 minutes to reference Lyra's wolf 3 times, in ways that were technically questions. Kaelin heard him out, then he said, "Thank you for your counsel," in a tone that meant the conversation was over. Varric left with a smile that didn't reach his eyes, and a private calculation working behind them. None of it changed anything observable. Lyra's wolf still did not speak. She sat with it the way she had always sat with it. Not in despair anymore, exactly, but in a kind of settled acknowledgement. She had made peace with the silence. She did not know yet that the silence was not empty. It was on a cold morning 4 months into their marriage that Kaelin descended to the lowest level of the royal archives and began to read things that had not been read in a long time. He was not certain what he was looking for. He had been certain only that something was wrong with the accepted story. Not wrong as in false, but wrong as in incomplete, the way a map that omits a mountain range is technically accurate and practically useless. He had spent 20 years learning the difference between what was documented and what was true. His instincts had been trained by a decade of governance, and his instincts said that Lyra Ashwood's wolf was not absent. It was restrained. The archives were deep, vaulted, lit by high skylights in the mountain stone that threw bright blocks of light across the shelves. He went through the contemporary records quickly and moved to the older ones, the bound journals from his predecessor's reigns, the territorial treaties from the period of the first consolidation, and eventually, in a section that had not been opened since before his father's time, a series of moon priest records kept in the old script. He worked through the translation slowly. Most of it was ceremonial notation, births and bondings and death records, and the formal acknowledgments of wolf awakenings across the territories, standard documentation from the ecclesiastical office. Then he found the entry dated 23 years ago. He read it once. Then he sat very still for a long time and read it again. The moon priest's handwriting was meticulous, the kind of careful notation that came from men who understood they were recording things that mattered. The entry described a birth in the Ashwood line, a female child, and the immediate response of the senior moon priests who had detected something in her bloodline that had not been seen in, the notation said, generations, and then, with a different pen, as though the writer had set it down and picked it back up, crossed that out and written centuries. The child carried the bloodline of the first guardian queen. Kaelin set down the journal. The first guardian queen. He knew the history the way every Alpha King was taught it, a ruler of the earliest consolidation period, whose wolf had not been a simple bond, but a guardian bond, something older, something that resonated across the pack structure of the entire Northern Territories. The guardian bloodline had been believed extinct for so long that it had passed from living knowledge into the category of mythology. But it had not been extinct. It had been dormant. He kept reading. The senior priests had convened quickly after the birth and reached a unanimous decision. The child's wolf, if awakened through a standard pack bond with any ordinary alpha, could destabilize the territorial structure catastrophically. The guardian bond did not work selectively. An alpha who accidentally completed it without understanding what he held would trigger an immediate territorial conflict as every rival pack moved to claim or destroy the bond. The civil war that followed would be, the priest who wrote this part chose his words carefully, uncontainable. So they had placed a suppression seal. Ancient, specific, a piece of ecclesiastical magic from the same consolidation period that had produced the guardian queens themselves, designed for exactly this contingency. The seal would prevent any ordinary bond from forming. It would keep the wolf silent until the correct conditions were met. The conditions were specific. The seal could only be broken by the rightful Alpha King, not any king, but the one whose bloodline carried the ancient counterbalance to the guardian wolf. The one who had been, in the phrasing the priests used with evident care, made capable of holding the bond without shattering under it. Kaelin read that phrase 3 times. Made capable. Not chosen because he was king, made the king capable of choosing her. He sat in the archive light for a long time. Every alpha who had passed Lyra at auction had not rejected an unwanted she-wolf. They had walked past a she-wolf so rare that the moon priests had spent 23 years ensuring she remained unclaimed. The rejections, the humiliations, the years of waiting, all of it had been the suppression seal, doing precisely what it was designed to do, preventing an accidental bond, protecting her, protecting the territories, protecting her from men who never could have held what she carried. He thought about the way she had stood at the end of the auction line, the brace in her jaw, the particular kind of exhaustion that came from a very long fight with a very quiet opponent. He thought about how she had looked at him and said, plainly, "I won't pretend to be something I'm not," and he understood now that the thing she believed she was not had in fact been the thing she was all along. He found High Priest Varys 2 days later. The old man was 72, retired to a sunlit tower room in the castle, and when Kaelin set the archive records on his table, Varys looked at them, and then looked out his window for a very long time before speaking. "I wondered," Varys said at last, "whether this day would come during my lifetime. Did you know?" "I knew fragments." The old priest's voice was thin but precise. "I was young when the seal was placed, junior enough not to be told the complete reasoning. But I read the same records you found, some years later, and I understood enough to know it should not be disturbed carelessly." He looked at Kaelin steadily. "You are not careless. The seal, it will respond to you," Varys said quietly. "That is what the records mean. The bond is not broken artificially. It recognizes the counterbalance. When you are ready, and when she understands what she carries, it will simply cease." He paused. "She should know the truth first, before anything else. She has earned that." Kaelin agreed without hesitation. He told Lyra that evening. Not in the library, outside, where the highland air was cold and the stars above the valley were very clear, and the mountain light that never quite left this latitude, even in deep winter, still touched the snow on the far peaks with faint silver. They stood on the ridge walk above the castle, and he told her everything. The archive, the seal, the guardian bloodline, what the priests had done and why. She did not speak for a long time. When she finally did, her voice was quiet and very controlled, the way she spoke when she was managing something large. "They sealed my wolf to protect me. And the territories, but yes. And every alpha who rejected me. Couldn't have bonded with you if they'd tried. The seal prevented it." Another long silence. "I believed for 23 years that I was broken." "I know. That's," she stopped, looked out at the valley below, the distant light of the capital, the peaks. "That's a very large thing to be wrong about." "Yes." She turned to look at him. In the mountain light, her amber-gold eyes held something he hadn't seen before. Not quite anger, not quite wonder, but something halfway between the two that was still finding its shape. "You are the one the seal responds to. That's what the records indicate. And you knew this when you chose me at the auction?" "No," he met her eyes steadily. "I chose you because you were the only person in that arena who wasn't trying to impress me. I found the records afterward." She looked at him for a long moment. "And now you're telling me because... because it's your truth, not mine to hold." Something shifted in her expression. The tight, careful composure she carried like armor shifted, just slightly, and beneath it he saw something raw and very real. A woman at the edge of understanding that the story she'd believed about herself had been wrong in the most fundamental possible way. She did not weep. She had always been, he was learning, someone who processed enormous things in a different register, not outward, but inward, like a deep-rooted tree that registers storm in its roots before its leaves. She said, "I want to hear her." "When you're ready," he said, "the territorial gathering is in 3 weeks. The truth should be public. The records should be seen by every alpha who..." "I know." She turned back to the valley. "I know." Counselor Varric learned about the records on the second day after Kaelin found them, through the particular channels that men of Varric's disposition maintained for exactly this kind of contingency. He did not panic. He was too experienced to panic. But he moved quickly. He came to Kaelin with a portfolio of arguments he had spent 2 days assembling. Territorial stability, the risks of introducing a guardian bond dynamic into the current political landscape, the precedent implications, the responses of the Eastern Pax, the northern border situation. Each argument was technically sound. Each argument was also, at its core, a variation on the same thing. The truth was inconvenient, and inconvenient truths were better managed quietly. Kaelin heard every argument. Then he said, "What you're describing is keeping her silent again." Varric paused. "I'm describing caution." "For whom?" The counselor's mouth closed. He was a political man, not a cruel one, and he had the intelligence to recognize, in that moment, that the distinction he'd thought he was making had just collapsed. He sat with that for a moment. Then he said, "The Eastern Alphas will not respond well to... Then they will have the opportunity to adjust." Kaelin gathered the archive documents. "The truth has been buried for 23 years. It will not be buried for 24. Varric left. He did not make another attempt. The Grand Territorial Gathering was held in a wide ceremonial valley, 3 leagues from the capital, where the highland meadows flattened into a broad open space that had been used for territorial assemblies since the first consolidation. Thousands of wolves attended, pack representatives, alpha leaders, elders, moon priest delegates, the assembled heads of every significant house in the Northern Territories. White banners flew on every post. The mountain light was extraordinary. They had come expecting a trade address. Kaelin had let them expect it. He stood at the ceremonial platform with the archive documents before him, and Lyra stood beside him in deep blue. Not the simple white of the auction gown, but something different. Something that had been chosen with care, and worn with the particular bearing of someone who has recently learned something clarifying about themselves, and is still finding the shape of it. He spoke clearly. He was not a man given to performance, and the address he gave was not performative. It was precise, factual, delivered with the calm authority of someone who had already decided what was true, and was not asking for agreement. He explained the suppression seal. He explained the guardian bloodline. He read from the archive records directly, and High Priest Varys, seated in the elders' section, watching with eyes that were calm and very old, confirmed the documents when Kaelin invited him to, which the old priest did with the measured precision of someone who had been waiting a long time to do exactly this. He explained what every rejection at every auction had actually meant. The arena was very quiet. He could see the faces of the alphas assembled before him. Some were simply listening, recalibrating. Some, the ones who had been at regional auctions over the past decade, who had walked past Lyra, or laughed at her, or participated in the public diminishments, had expressions that were harder to read, something working behind the eyes, some version of, "I believed I was exercising judgment, I believed I was assessing something correctly, I was not." He explained the final element last, the counterbalance. The reason the seal had broken in the first place, not through ceremony or ecclesiastical action, but through the same ancient recognition that the first guardian records described. The bond that did not choose because of title, but made a king capable of the choice. "She was never the unwanted she-wolf," he said. "There has never been such a thing. There was a she-wolf the territories were not yet ready for. There were 23 years of protection that was never explained to the person it protected." He looked out at the assembled crowd. "That ends today." He turned to Lyra. She was looking at him, and her amber-gold eyes held something he had not seen there before. Not the managed quiet, not the practiced composure. Something like the moment before a held breath releases, a kind of readiness that had been building in her without a shape to fit. "The seal is already gone," Varys had told him. "It dissolved when the bond completed. What remains is only her wolf's own choice about when to come forward." Kaelin said nothing else. He simply waited. And Lyra closed her eyes. The valley was very still. The mountain light was clear and cold and exact. Somewhere above them, an eagle crossed the sky without sound. Then the light changed. Not dramatically. Not the theatrical blaze of fiction. It began at her hands, a soft, silver-gold luminescence that moved through her skin like something waking from a long sleep, turning, orienting itself, the way a person turns toward warmth. It moved upward, spreading across her arms, her shoulders, into her hair, and the amber of her eyes, when she opened them, had deepened, become layered, the old gold shot through with silver that had not been there before. She inhaled sharply. Not pain, the opposite of pain. A presence finally arrived. A warmth she had waited 23 years to feel. A voice, her own voice, but older, deeper, the voice of something that had never been absent, but had only been kept very, very quiet, like a fire banked against a long winter, saying at last, "I am here." She pressed her hands to her chest, and the silver-gold light bloomed outward in a wave that was not quite physical, that moved through the assembled crowd like a resonance, a recognition, something ancient in the pack structure, responding to something it had not felt in centuries. Every alpha in the valley bowed. Not in submission, in recognition, the way one recognizes the arrival of something that has been a long time coming, that has always been true, even when it was invisible. Lyra stood in the mountain light with her eyes open, and her wolf's presence flooding through her like a tide that had finally, finally, found its shore. She did not weep. She laughed, just once, brief and quiet and completely unguarded, a sound that had no performance in it, no management, nothing careful. The sound of a woman who has discovered that the verdict she accepted about herself was not a verdict at all. Alpha Brennan of the Coldwater Pack stood near the eastern edge of the gathering and did not speak for a long time after. He was not a man inclined toward internal examination, but he could not, standing there, avoid the arithmetic. The woman he had publicly mocked as a statue, as broken, as beneath the effort of pity, was standing in the center of the territorial gathering in silver-gold light, while every alpha in the kingdom bowed to what she carried. He had believed he was exercising sound judgment. He had believed he was reading the situation clearly. He had been wrong in the most absolute possible way, and there was no version of that truth he could reframe into something comfortable. He was not alone in this. All around him, alphas who had participated in the decade of dismissal were doing the same quiet arithmetic. The girl nobody wanted had never been nobody. The unwanted she-wolf had not been unwanted. She had been unavailable. And none of them had been capable of seeing the difference. Spring arrived in the Northern Territories with the kind of ease that comes when something long held back has finally been released. The mountain snow receded into the high peaks. The valley below the royal castle greened. The crystal lake at the base of the Highland Plateau turned from winter gray to the deep blue-green of warmer months, and in the castle gardens, the terraced plantings that someone with genuine feeling had designed came into their own. Lavender along the first tier, climbing white roses on the second, and below those, the kitchen herbs that Lyra had, quietly, over the course of a winter, begun to tend. She was not the same as she had been at the auction. She was not entirely different either. The core of her, the gentleness, the observance, the quiet compassion she had never let the years of rejection calcify into bitterness, was unchanged. But something had been added, a fullness, the presence of the wolf she had always been told was missing, who turned out to have been waiting rather than absent, and who had arrived not with fanfare but with the particular warmth of something that had always been true and was now simply allowed to be seen. Her father came in early spring. He arrived alone, without her mother's orchestrating energy to fill the silences, and he sat in the garden with her for a long time without much preamble. "I spent years apologizing for you," he said finally, to people who were not owed an apology. Lyra looked at him. There was something she had prepared herself to feel in this moment, something guarded, something that required management. It turned out not to be necessary. He looked old in the spring light, not unkind, just old and recalibrating. The way she had been recalibrating, the way everyone who had participated in the accepted story was now quietly doing the math on what they had believed and what had been true. "You were trying to explain something that hadn't been explained to you," she said. "That's a more generous reading than I deserve." "Perhaps, but it's the one I want to offer." He looked at her for a moment, with an expression she hadn't seen from him in years. Not the tiredness, not the careful management. Something more raw. "She is extraordinary," he said, and she understood he meant the wolf, the light, the thing he had watched happen at the gathering from the elder tier, with his hand pressed flat against his chest. "You have always been. I should have." He stopped. "You were doing what seemed true," Lyra said. "The truth was harder to see." She took his hand. He didn't speak, but he didn't let go. Elise came the same week, less complicated and therefore more immediately useful, arriving with two saddlebags and an inexhaustible supply of commentary, and staying for 10 days, during which she helped Lyra rearrange the library, befriended three of the castle's kitchen staff, and told Lyra every single thing she had been carefully not saying for the past 3 years, in one extended conversation that left them both laughing, and then briefly crying, and then laughing again. "I was so ashamed," Elise said, with the directness of someone who had decided honesty was the only way through. I'm ashamed that I was ashamed. I don't know how to resolve that. You're here now, Lyra said. That's not enough. It's enough, Lyra said. To start. On a morning in late spring, bright and clear, Kaelin found her on the mountain ridge above the castle, looking out at the valley where the capital lay spread below, all sunlit stone and morning smoke from cookfires, and the distant sound of the market bells beginning. He stood beside her. Below them, in the castle gardens, the children of visiting pack representatives raced along the terraced paths, small shapes weaving between the lavender rows. Two elders sat on the lower bench in a patch of morning sun, deep in conversation. A delegation from the Western Territories had arrived the day before, and their wolves moved through the lower courtyard with the particular ease of guests who had been made to feel welcome rather than merely received. They look at you differently, Kaelin said. I know. She watched the courtyard below. It still feels unfamiliar. Respect usually does, when you've been deprived of it long enough. She turned to look at him, silver-gray eyes in the morning light, the same quiet steadiness she had read at the auction, and still had not fully mapped. She was better at reading him now than she had been, and what she read there was not performance. It was not political calculation. It was the particular attention of someone who had looked at her very carefully from the beginning, when no one else was looking at all, and had seen what everyone else had missed. Why did you choose me? She asked. At the auction, before you knew any of it. He was quiet for a moment. Then, every woman in that arena wanted something from me. That's not criticism. The wanting was natural, but it was the loudest thing in the room. He looked at her. You were the only one who expected nothing. I expected rejection. That's different from wanting something. The expecting was honest. It was the most honest thing I saw all day. He paused. Honesty is rarer than beauty, and more difficult to ignore. She considered that. Below them, a child in a blue jacket tripped on the garden path, scrambled up, and ran on without stopping. The elders laughed. The morning bells continued. People will say it was destiny, Lyra said. The seal, the bloodline, the counterbalance. They'll say you had no choice. Let them. Does it not bother you? No. He looked at her steadily. Destiny didn't choose me because I was king. Whatever made me the king who could choose you, that was a much longer story. I don't take credit for the outcome. I take credit for the choice. She turned back to the valley. Her wolf, present now in the way the warmth of the sun was present, constant, foundational, no longer something she was aware of by its absence, turned with her. She could feel the territories in a way she had no framework for before. A faint resonance in the pack structure below, something the guardian wolf recognized, and was recognized by. Not power, exactly. Belonging. For 23 years, she had believed something inside her was fundamentally broken. For 23 years, she had carried herself with quiet grace through a verdict that had never been hers to accept. The truth had simply been waiting to be allowed to stand. She took Kaelin's hand, and the mountain light fell across the valley below, and the kingdom, her kingdom, she was still learning to say that, spread out in the spring morning, in all its ordinary, extraordinary life. There would be more work. The Eastern packs were still adjusting. Varric had accepted the new reality with the compressed dignity of a man who prided himself on adapting, though not without difficulty. There were territorial councils still to navigate, and records still to transcribe, and the full implications of a guardian bond returned after centuries were only beginning to be understood. But below them, the children ran through the lavender, and the elders smiled in the morning light, and wolves from territories that had once simply assumed Lyra Ashwood was a woman without a future greeted her now with the particular warmth of people who had revised a wrong understanding and were not entirely sorry to have been wrong. She had not become someone else. She had simply been allowed to be seen. Not rescued by fate, not elevated by circumstance alone, but allowed, finally, to stand in the light she had always carried, the light that the world had been too certain of its own certainties to notice. Later, when people asked the Alpha King why he had chosen the most unwanted woman in the kingdom, he would answer simply, with the half-smile that was as much expression as he typically permitted. I didn't choose the unwanted she-wolf. I chose the only one who was never meant to belong to anyone else. And Lyra, beside him, would hear her wolf agree.